Welcome, and you're listening to a Queued Up Media Group production of Geekologist Radio, a division of the Ninja Pancake family of podcasts. And now...
Shut up and sit down.
Hey, it's Damien, and welcome to Geekologist Radio, where we take you through our queue, into our gaming systems, and ride that hype train from the past into the future. Let's introduce our crew for tonight's cast. First up, we have Chris Two Wolves. What's up, man?
What's up? All right, let's move on. Cajun?
Hey, it's Cajun here. All right, let's move on to Big D.
Too much to do. I'm Big D. Let's go.
All right, yes, we're moving fast because there's so much stuff to cover, and Fouts isn't here. He has no internet to tell us that's how, so let's go.
All right, first up, I wanted to touch back on something. We're going to eventually have a segment. We'll figure it out, but I'm trying to learn the whole thing of the Reddit universe. We are going to actually have a subreddit for Queued Up Media. But I wanted to touch back on, you know, we had Josh Brolin as Cable. We've been talking a lot about Deadpool 2. We're going to talk more about it in the future. But going through Reddit, I found from, this is a discussion that's been brought up by Mr. Plow 8 on the comic book movies Reddit, or subreddit. It goes, in Deadpool 2, in Deadpool 2, Deadpool and Cable go back in time to before Hugh Jackman took the role of Wolverine. Deadpool meets Jackman, and Jackman mentions that he's up for a major role in a movie called X-Men. Deadpool tells him he should pass on it because superhero movies will probably never catch on. Then, at the end of the movie, they're back in the present day, and Wolverine is there, but he's played by the new actor.
I like it.
Yeah, it's like that... That would work perfect. It works perfect with Deadpool. It's like an epic idea of how to do it. And I really hope that if they do go with, instead of going with his son, if they go with casting a new Wolverine, they need to utilize Deadpool and Cable to do that because it's a perfect roll off.
Yeah, perfect time travel.
All right, so jumping away from that, we're gonna get on into NRQ.
We switched round and round till half past dawn. There was 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on.
NRQ is where we talk about movies or television shows that we're currently watching, stuff that's been up and current. I sat down for what was a painful hour of Andy Wexler. And like this, and it was, oh my god, it was annoying. I couldn't even deal with it. My wife looked at me about the half hour mark and said, "We're really gonna sit through this?" She shut down, and so she's on her phone, and I'm like, "Well, I gotta watch it for the show, so I'm gonna finish it." So I'm in Discord, and I'm like, "Oh, this is terrible, but you know, I'm gonna sit through this." And at the hour mark, I text you guys. I'm like, "No, I'm done." I mean, it was cool because like the intro shows a bunch of 90s actors, which are all like, and I want to say like we're talking C list. Pauly Shore.
I was gonna say, how awesome was it to see Pauly Shore?
Yeah, I mean, Chris Rock was there, but Chris Rock is not Chris Rock anymore. So, I mean, all these guys knew him back in the day. And even then, they couldn't stand him. So, like, they couldn't stand him. And then they cut back, and they'd show him, and they'd show, you know, where this is going. And then it would cut back to that again. It wasn't disjointed. I could see where the story was going, but it just wasn't interesting enough for me to continue. And so, I honestly, I think it was about an hour and 15 into it. I shut it down. So, it's a little over a two-hour movie on Netflix. It just recently dropped, and I couldn't do it.
I made it an hour and 37 minutes into it, and then I started doing the head bob. Yep. And like I love Adam Sandler movies. I even kind of liked his Western one that they came out with. Like I found humor in some of that parts. However, he's got one swing that he actually connected with that I feel in this Netflix series of films he's been doing, and that was The Do-Over. I really thoroughly loved The Do-Over.
Here's the thing, when you talk...
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, when you talk about Adam Sandler movies, I loved, air quotes, loved, it's a past tense, Adam Sandler movies. I mean, Happy Gilmore and those type movies, we're talking 10 years ago, almost 15 years ago now. I can't even tell you the last time he did a movie that actually mattered or a show that mattered.
See, my family really likes the the I can't. You know, I guess it's not that good because I can't think of the name of it. But
there you go.
Yeah, with the kids.
Yeah, but the thing is with the Adam Sandler stuff is like Adam Sandler movies haven't lost a ton of money. They haven't made a lot. But they haven't lost a lot. So he's been doing these almost as like vacations. It seems like, and so he hasn't had that fall from grace that a lot of
Jim Carrey,
other people who
lose studios a lot of money.
When they basically when you lose studios a lot of money that you people stop giving you money, they realize you're in a downward spiral and you have to prove it again. He's constantly had this spiral of failure, and Netflix just threw him a life raft at the end of this all, like, and to do stuff for them because they are just they're crazy flush with cash. And man, it's like when people are like, "Yeah, Adam Sandler," and like, how many times can we be excited about Adam Sandler stuff to him let us down? And for me, it's I'm I that ship sailed for me a long time ago.
Yeah, but they did
just say like a day or two ago. I don't remember if it was today or yesterday that Netflix released some crazy numbers of the numbers of views that he's been getting with his content on Netflix, and apparently it's been very successful for them. Which I was kind of surprised because
people like nostalgia. They like to watch old movies, and if it's free, I'll watch it all day long.
I guess so.
Never underestimate somebody being high.
When you're 15 and you watch a movie, and your dad walks in and you're cracking up, and your dad's like, "That's just stupid," you know. But
that's
you're 15
us.
And you think it's awesome. We're our dads right now.
Yeah,
looking at Adam Sandler.
All right, so let's get past Danny Wexler. We're gonna go down to the Get Down season 2.
Yes. Speaking of like my dad's age, this is set when I was born, man, and this is fantastic because Shaolin's the DJ that we call conductor because Shaolin fantastic is a bad mother. What I do weddings.
we've seen you sing before, dude.
Oh yeah. I'm 3 beers in already. We're on pace. But man, this season 2 still fantastic. Hour and a half plus long episodes. This season's only 5. I thought it would be 6. And one thing, the last episode, I think the only big criticism I have, was that the last episode ended too fast. Is they just jam-packed too much in there at the end. And it got a little trippy at 2 parts because I think they probably let Jaden Smith direct those 2 sequences because it was like Jaden Smith's Twitter was on the screen on 2 of those trippy drug scenes. But still, great original music, great performances. Really love this season and hope it comes back for season 3. Anybody else seen this?
I haven't yet.
Okay.
I saw the first season and loved it. The second season's been on my to-do list, just haven't gotten there yet. But you're pushing me into watching it.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Well worth it. And once we started, my wife was like tugging me like, "All right, let's go. Let's finish this up. I want to see more of it." And then taking into Better Call Saul, you watching this one, Big D?
Yeah, I'm a little behind, though. I'm at the beginning of the season, so.
Okay, all right. So I won't do any spoilers on this one then because it just finished up some of the setup from last week. It didn't get much more info from there. Finished up some recon stuff. It set our main villains, got our heroes where they want them. And now it's time for the twists and turns. But I think overall, Chris over here, this would be the season that if Chris Tuwells was watching, he would like start to hate it because it's slow right now. It's all development, all slow, no action. So I think he would just be like, "Ugh, pulling his teeth out for this stuff."
Which is why I don't watch. Honestly, like I really wish I could get into Better Call Saul. I talked about this last week. I wish it was something that I'd be a little bit more interested in. I just can't do it. It's, and I think I'm past the train. You know what I mean? So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And that's a lot to catch up because right now, one thing we do on the show is we discuss like everything that's great, and so we're trying to follow everything that's great, and then to keep up with that is really, really tough.
Well, what's positive is at least one of us in the group is always watching something. You know what I mean? So if two of us or three of us aren't into it, one of us is, and so we'll always keep you abridged of that kind of stuff, which I think is really great.
Yep, and then you get that rare show that everybody's just like, "We're all on the Taboo train."
Yeah. Westworld.
And then we're all on the Dish train. Yeah.
Well, some of us were on the train.
Yeah. When that train makes a turn. Yeah. Now
the new season of Bachelorette. We'll have to talk about that.
Somebody's got to pick their favorite bachelor and then just go with it. Who's going to win?
I don't want to be that podcast.
I'll do it. I'll do it.
No.
Yeah. That's the Damien show by Damien.
Hashtag Magic Mike.
All right.
Hey, happy wife, happy life. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I'm glad my wife likes the shows that I like to talk about on here. And what we just watched and just dropped yesterday was Fargo Season 3, Episode 1. Man.
How has Fargo been in comparison to the movie, to the series Transference? Because I have wanted to get into it. It looks intriguing, but I haven't quite jumped off the boat yet.
Anybody else still on that boat train that haven't jumped into it yet? Okay, let me set the table for you. Okay, the series formula remains the same throughout the movie and the show seasons that won the movie awards. The TV series has 31 Emmy nominations, 5 wins, has 6 Golden Globe nominations, 2 wins. A lot of those were best miniseries. The formula is this: hapless everyman, hired killers, dog police officer, great cast. That's it. Every season the same. Season 1 set in 2006. Season 2 was set in 1979. Season 3, 2010. It's True Detective style, but not the dark and gritty. It has a lot of humor. It has the same style as the movie, but it's a new cast every time, set with a new crime, but it's the same formula. Hapless everyman, okay. Hired killers, dog police. Boom.
What's and cool about currently, that, though... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, go.
I was going to say, what's cool about that is that TV series like this, they lend themselves to be, hey, you can jump on at any point and not feel left behind.
Yeah. Billy Bob Thornton was in season 1. He won Best Actor Emmy for that season, or Golden Globe. I forgot which one. I think he won Emmy for Best Actor that season. Martin Freeman and Colin Hanks are the other big names. Season 2 had Kirsten Dunst, Patrick Wilson, Ted Danson. This season has Ewan McGregor, Mary Elizabeth Winstead from Scott Pilgrim, Michael Stuhlbarg. He was Nucky's brother in Boardwalk Empire. I just really like that guy, so I was like, oh, that's the dude from Boardwalk. And as Ewan McGregor again, playing two roles in this one. And you get guys like that and playing roles that when his first scene was there, I was watching the screen like, who is that? Because it was so far away, and then all of a sudden it zooms in like, oh, it's freaking Ewan McGregor. I didn't even remember. Like, I saw a long time ago. I didn't even remember he was in there. And he was so in that role because it all takes place in Minnesota. All 3 seasons take place in Minnesota in different areas. So they all have that northern Midwest accent and the humor that Fargo brings.
So in between, these aren't on the list, but there's a couple of shows that I've watched. My wife and I started watching The Leftovers. Totally wasn't into it. Kind of creepy. You know what? I couldn't really get into the first episode because we're starting with season 1. My wife was really into it, which actually shocked me. I like fell asleep. I wake up and she's still watching, and I'm like, really? And she's like, yeah, it's actually pretty interesting. The whole dog thing kind of creeped me out in the beginning. So like so that was a little off. And she is now on episode 11 of 13 Reasons, which is pretty interesting. Specifically, now that show has got the bands on it for kids, and it also now every episode has one of the precursors early that says, you know, this show is not meant for blah 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 age, yada yada yada. A lot of people got offended, which, you know, happens with most things. I mean, again, book been out for like 10 years. Totally baffles me that this is a huge issue, but they had to put all of this out because, you know, there were a lot of people that got offended. So, but really cool, like the fact that people are still talking about it, people are still into it, which has me happy because I really like the show.
Talking to you about the Leftovers, mm-hmm. it gets creepy and good. Like the character development mm-hmm. is really, really spot on with it. I start that first season, it gets to where it's better, but the second season, obviously I feel like they've got new writers or something. I'm almost done with the second season right now. And looking forward to the third, and the third is the final season.
Which, again, one of those deals where, like, it's so hard because you have to get through a first season, which means you only have 2 seasons to really care for, and you're guessing if the third season is going to be as good as the second, so.
And they say, yeah. They're saying already critics that have been able to pre-see the third season mm-hmm. have said that that the third season is some of the best TV out there.
Nice.
That's critically acclaimed right there. That's what I've been telling you from getting started, mm-hmm. is that the third season is what has intrigued me, all the previews for it, and that's why I've been watching through it. And it is got a very, as it's playing on, mm-hmm. it does get kind of a Stan feel, okay. just FYI. Okay.
Yeah. And a quick comment, you said best series ever. That one quick point I forgot to make on Fargo before we move to the next one is Fargo is the 23rd highest ranked TV show of all time on IMDb.
Wow, that's crazy.
So, it's above Westworld and I think right below Sopranos. So yeah,
above Sopranos. Wow. That's nuts.
Yeah.
Well, I thought this was interesting. Last weekend was the opening weekend for Fate and the Furious, of the Furious, and it beat The Force Awakens for the best opening weekend with over $532 million worldwide. Now, when I say that, a little over $100 million of it was domestic and in the United States. So that tells you that the rest was overseas. So, mm-hmm. I mean, we'll take it with a grain of salt because remember, Force Awakens opened in the U.S. and it opened domestically. And then it opened almost 3 weeks later overseas, specifically in China. So it makes that a little different. Because over in Asia, Fast and the Furious is unbelievably popular, almost much, obviously more so than Star Wars, but still over 532 million, and it's still going strong. It's, I believe, over 700 million currently at this point. So if you feel like the Fast and the Furious is going anywhere, it's not. It's not.
Actually.
Nine and 10 are confirmed, yes. I think. Yeah,
those are confirmed, but also Universal, because of the success that it's having overseas, is that they are actually working on extensions to the Tokyo Drift storylines.
That makes sense. If you look at this series was originally a car series. It's no longer a car series. It's an action series.
And
cars are kind of the byproduct of whatever the action series is.
For people who have seen the series, I stopped after two. If anybody hit... explain to me how a group of mechanic car racers became international super spy agents.
It's really weird. It was
okay.
I have to watch. And I'm talking to a kid that I work with, a younger guy, and he goes, "You want to know one of the funny things?" And he's really into cars. And he goes, "First of all, those car races are not like that." And he races cars, like he street races cars. And he's like, "They're not. First of all, they're not like that. One, the girls don't look anything near the girls that are in this thing."
No, no.
And he goes, "Two, there's no early 20 somethings that have 1965 vehicles that look like muscle cars that look
no,
like that
that's
because
the
they can't afford them." So he was like, "None of that's all bullshit." And I'm like, "Oh, that's awesome." Like we were talking about it at work today.
Yeah, I used to go to those.
I'm going
to
race you with my Honda Civic with a
The Rice Burners. I used to go to these races and they'd have what they called the alumni. And it would be a dad and son, and the dads were the ones that had all the muscle, right? American muscle cars. Yeah. And then their kids all had like Honda Civics.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's what it was with my buddies. It was pretty crazy. But yeah, it's a big event, but it's not like these events that they show on there. They over glorify.
So,
well, Big D has one of those cars, right? No,
oh sure. Hey, I used to have a Honda Civic hatchback, nice. Man. It had four speeds.
Was it a CRX?
Slow, slower, slowest, and then move.
Yeah. I used to have to, like, kick out the floorboards and pedal it uphill.
That's awesome.
Oh, Flood Flintstone style.
Damien, you were watching The Magician season finale. Let's talk about that.
Okay. This series has just done nothing but pull me in so, so much. The practical effects are ridiculous with it for being network television. It is one of the most successful series to ever be on Sci-Fi. This is starting to the numbers are starting to look better than Battlestar Galactica.
Wow, that's strong. Yeah,
it's on the trail to go, like it's on par to be able to overtake that with I think it was season 3.
Wow.
And they already renewed for season 3. They weren't telling. Everybody was worried because you followed their Twitter and everything. They were like pushing it to the very season finale. And at the end of the season finale, they pop up and says, "We'll see you back in season 3." And they totally leave it as a cliffhanger. But the difference is that these cliffhangers, they give you answers to the story, which is great. They answered their stuff, and then they set up other questions. And this next one has like, it was like three cliffhangers at the end of the season finale. But instead of being angry, you're just like, give me more of the show. The actors are phenomenal. The story is in depth. It's actually got me wanting to go and get the books. I haven't had an experience with a series like this pull me in this hard since I watched The Legend of the Seeker. Legend of the Seeker was amazing for me and pulled me into the books of The Sword of Truth. But the books, I'll tell you what, the books, some of the stuff that happens in the books would make George R.R. Martin blush.
My wife and I are looking for something newer, so that we haven't seen. So maybe watching from the beginning from The Magicians would be a nice change of pace.
As they told me, I stopped. He had to give it a couple episodes apparently, okay, because I stopped and haven't gone back because the first ones are
kinda wonky, yeah,
slow and distracting.
It's story building. The first ones are story building, but once it gets going, it feels really good. The best way to watch it is Netflix because it's not cut. So you don't get the blanks in between the F words.
Just as a side note, I'm the first person to bitch about these first episodes and how slow they are, and then I can't get in. But if you think about it, Seinfeld, Lost was a little different. Lost, you can get into almost right away. But Walking Dead was really slow first episode. So you really have to commit to a lot of things. Even Breaking Bad, the first couple episodes weren't that great. And then it kind of sped up a little bit. So you have to give these shows a little bit of time, and maybe that's just something that I need to reconsider.
Yeah, I saw a blog post. I need to find the link somewhere, and if I do, I'll have posted in the show notes. But it was a compilation of top TV series and when to start watching them. Like, this series wasn't good till this. This series wasn't good till this. If you want to get somebody into this series, watch this. It was basically for fans of those shows who just tell them, watch the show, and then their friends like, hey, it sucked. Mm-hmm. So, these are the episodes you tell them to watch first before you get into it. So I need to find that list and post that.
All right, so we're going to go a little old school with a movie called Search Party.
Yeah, well, so you guys keep talking and got me watching and catching up still because watching Silicon Valley. And so I was going through HBO and I'm looking and I'm like, hey, wait. I'm like, okay, this movie is done in 2014, but it looks kind of funny. So I looked up the preview, watched it. Like, okay. It has T.J. Miller and Thomas Middleditch.
Did you just call him Middle Dick? Is that what you just said?
I did.
No more Michael Fassbender. Jesus. We are now hashtag Middle Dick.
Middle Dick. Oh, Fassbender is now gone. It's now Middle Dick. That's awesome.
Oh, God. I don't even know how to come up with the voice for that.
This is great.
Serious.
Yeah,
the film basically is if you took Harold and Kumar, crossed it with The Hangover, using the cast from various HBO series, namely the two main guys from two of the main actors from Silicon Valley, and that type of humor. I mean, it's really good. Don't watch it with any kids in the room because maybe it's the fact of if you see this movie. Maybe this is why I said Middle Dick, was Thomas Middleditch, he is naked most of the film. So,
oh, that's why.
You see his middle dick. That's great.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to say that this is a spoiler ahead. He jumps while covered in cocaine, which is like his costume most of the show. And he makes a jump. And he's flying through the air, and it's like they zoom in, and it's like he's doing the helicopter.
Nice.
That's just...
Oh, man. Talk about role commitment.
That's great.
Talk about role commitment. Oh, my God.
Yeah. It was... I mean, yeah. It was... But it was good.
Was it like, a 747 or a prop plane?
Definitely propeller. Definitely propeller.
did he prep for his role prior to filming, or did he go in?
I don't feel like you can go work out for that.
He's got a pump on the side, you know. It's
never worked. Okay.
The film have a lot of
trainer
fluff
for weeks.
But But if I was to rate the movie, the movie actually gets a 33% of Rotten Tomato. But if you go and you start looking at it, people who are starting to now, because this came out in 2014, people who have just started watching Silicon Valley and stuff like that, they're coming back to it. And so it's actually doing better now, because it's like these movies where they film them like a long time ago or whatever, and then all of a sudden they're like, oh, the studios hold on to them. They're like, hey, we're going to put this back on so people can watch it, because now this actor is really big and we got a couple of their bigger shows or series or movies on. They're going to want to look for more content. Let's put this out there.
Right. And it's because the cost of putting it into theaters is more than what they'll make, because they'll invest so much in it, get the screenings out of the way. Like, we're not going to make our money back on this. And they'll just hold it and do small release. And then we have to find it in the ether to finally find some of this good stuff that they
thought. What's funny is if you look on IMDb, the popularity is going up right now. And that is because of the series that the actors are all involved in. And then I'd give it a good six out of 10, maybe a little bit higher, but it did have a lot of scenes that made me chuckle. I wouldn't have paid to see this in theaters by no means.
Hey, it's free.
But if you have HBO,
yeah,
it's free. If you have HBO, go check it out. But I'm going to tell you one thing. If you are a Destiny fan, and the factor is there is a Destiny joke actually in this show, Zavala is in this.
Really?
Nice.
Yeah, the actor who plays Zavala is in this, and then there is a joke later on in that.
All right. I think we've come to the end of this segment. We're time to move on to our Game On. All right, so in Game On, we talk about any of the games that we're playing or things or news of video game industry that have upcoming this week. So first we're going to be talking about Elder Scrolls Online and the prep for Morrowind.
I'm jumping back into Elder Scrolls Online, giving it a little bit of a go. I actually jumped onto my vampire character I got on there, which the thing about Elder Scrolls Online is there's so many different times they do rollouts, because you think about Destiny, there's different balances and stuff that they got to do, right, with just guns for the most part. They have to critique some of the class abilities, but in Elder Scrolls Online, or in MMOs in general, you got to think about all the different classes, all the different spells, weapon combos, things like that they have to balance. You get your points given to you. There, right now, I'm going on there and I'm learning. I'm basically doing a character grind to collect items. If you're looking at getting Morrowind and you're wanting to play the new character is kind of like a druid, ranger kind of mix. That's what a lot of people, when they're going to get brought back into the game, you're going to see a ton of these characters. Well, what you got to do is you got to think about what you're going to dress your guys up in, armor and stuff like that. I recommend, if you're getting into the game, go mine, basically craft a bunch of stuff or get your armor rating up so that you can have someone who can create armor and weapons. That's going to be your two main things. Focus on getting that stuff in there and have at it and enjoy it. Because the thing is, if you haven't played Morrowind or Elder Scrolls Online in a long time, they opened up the whole map. You don't have to worry about being this rate, this after rank 50 thing to be able to go to this area. You can go anywhere. And so you have hundreds of hours worth of content without even buying any DLC for the game.
Nice.
Another thing is if you see something in-game, and this is just a heads up to anything, if you see something in-game and you're like, oh, that's like a thousand coins or whatever, before you buy the coins, you can buy just 1,500 coins, or that which equates to $15. You can also get ESO Plus for $15, which gives you access to all the expansions, as well as leveling boosts and stuff, but gives you also 1,500 coins. The only thing that you have to do that's difficult with that at all is if you want to remove your subscription from that, you have to go to the website, Microsoft's Xbox Live website, and cancel your sub that way. But it's a much better deal to get your 1,500 coins to go and sub to that than it is to do it in any other way. But if you're looking forward to Morrowind, and you have ESO already, I recommend getting in there and just grinding and collecting all the stuff you can because when that expansion comes out, if you have items to like craft and stuff, you can boost your level super fast.
Well, speaking of a game that you can go anywhere at any time and run into any high level stuff, Nintendo announced that they sold more Breath of the Wild games on Switch than Switch consoles.
Yeah, it's kind of bananas. They've sold 906,000 Switches, which is basically the amount that they've popped out. Like, they can't sell any more than they're producing. So to spit out close to a million just within the first month, I think is pretty cool. What they did as far as Breath of the Wild for the Switch, 925,000. So they've sold in the neighborhood of 19,000 more copies of a game than they have actual consoles. So folks are pre-ordering games with the anticipation of getting the Switch and then not having the Switch yet. You know what I thought was really was more telling was the fact that they sold almost 500,000 copies of Breath of the Wild on the Wii U. So people who have the Wii U are holding on to it, playing that game, and you never know. People may be having both copies, may having the Wii U copy as well as the Switch copy, and then, you know, eventually just kind of transitioning over.
The other thing that I was thinking is, first off, what you just said there, but also how many of those are there? It'd be interesting to put those numbers up to see how many people that are waiting to get the Switch purchased the collector's edition. Like, how many of the collector's edition was sold to boost that number? Because the collector's edition came with so much stuff that you're going to have people that are going to buy multiple copies sometimes just to get those items.
Right, that's what I was thinking, that it was mostly multiple copy sales of people who wanted to collect the edition and the other copy for whatever reason makes sense to them to buy a regular copy after collector's edition.
Well, what would make sense is if you bought the collector's edition, sold back that copy, and bought and downloaded a copy so that all you collected was the collector's edition stuff, because you could not purchase the digital download version and the collector's stuff. So you could get your money back basically from GameStop or from a Best Buy, or short like maybe 10, 15 bucks on it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Except for the $10-$15 loss you take on that. That would.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm proven fact here. If you didn't have a pre-order, you're hunting. Like, you're literally playing Ghost Hunter with this thing. So for those who
trust me, I'm still kicking myself. I'm kicking myself repeatedly.
You had one in your hand.
I know I did.
Speaking of Breath of the Wild, I beat Ganon, and I'm 2 shrines away from 120 shrine completion.
Nice.
So I'm almost done with the shrines right now. But I didn't realize this, but I'm trying to do the last shrine. I found about 101 shrines by myself, and I'm actually like just looking at the map and like going find where they are, because I couldn't find the last 18, 19.
Have you found all the last ones?
Oh, God, no. I think I found 170 of those on my own. There's 900. Yeah, not even close. So the 2 of the longest ones to open up, one where you have to take pictures of a bunch of different types of guardians, and one where you have to stand in your underwear under a blood moon to unlock it. I am still waiting for a blood moon on that one. I'm just running around killing stuff. Like, come on, blood moon. And I think my worst fear is going to happen is I'm going to be killing stuff. It's going to happen. I won't be able to make it to the shrine in time to stand in my underwear on the dang platform.
Is this so you can turn into a Wolf Link? Is this like a throwback, a blood moon in underwear, and then you transform and it's less clothes to come off?
Well, the blood moon is the game mechanic to reset the ads. So you can kill the ads and they won't be there. Forever until the blood moon. The blood moon resets all the ads, your world is constantly dangerous, but it only happens after a blood moon, and it's not a set time till that comes out. It's random. Many people think it's some sort of equation that goes into how many enemies you've killed, resets the blood moon and makes it go and resets the ads.
Listen, you know, that's what I like. You got to get handed to Nintendo for having a game like that. It's not all about, you know, putting out graphical power and all that stuff. They really put out a game that just is a gift to players. It's almost the same kind of thing that CD Projekt Red did when it came out with The Witcher. It's a gift to the players. That's awesome to hear.
So, speaking of games, and the reasons why I haven't finished Breath of the Wild is because I've been playing a bunch of Telltale stuff right now. I originally played Walking Dead's The New Frontier Episode 3. I know, Big D, you're playing this, so I'm not going to get too spoilerish on it. I will say that, how can I put this so that it isn't very spoilery? Javi's character has some moxie. We're going to see some more Clem. So Clem is back a little bit. And we see Jesus for a little while, and then we don't see Jesus for a little while. So you're getting characters in and out, which I think is really interesting. I think you're getting a little bit more in-depth on Javi's brother and kind of what he's going through. And then there's a big surprise that kind of curtails at this at the end of this episode that you don't really see coming. It's a little bit more of just a filler episode to me. And sometimes The Walking Dead will do this. In previous seasons, you'll notice there's like an episode where it feels just like a filler episode. Episode 3 kind of feels like that. It feels like it's just giving you backstory on everything that is opposite of Javi's group and is his brother's group, and you're getting a little bit more character background on some of those players. Still interested, still think it's really good. A lot of that has to do with the fact that I have emotional ties to Clementine, so that might have a lot to do with it. If she wasn't involved in this story, I'm not really sure how much farther I'd be. I may even have stopped at this point, but I'll be playing The Walking Dead all the way through, at least for this season, and then we'll make a determination on if I'll play again. It honestly feels very phoned in to me, at least through 3 episodes. It feels very... It doesn't feel like seasons 1 and seasons 2. It doesn't feel like there's a lot in... There's no investment for me. Javi's a great character and all. I don't care for him that much. So, I mean, if you brought anybody back... I think season 2 had a big deal. And Big D, you played season 2, correct? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So, when Lee passes, right? And this is not a spoiler. If you haven't played season 1, forget about it. It's been forever. You have connections to that group from season 1 come right back in your face again in season 2, which is why I was invested in season 2. The only investment I have in season 3 is Clementine. And it was like, oh, there's a Jesus spotting. That's great. I watched Walking Dead. So that's kind of cool. And they mention in this episode at one point and one point only, they talk about the tiger and they talk about going to
the kingdom.
They mentioned the kingdom one time, and it was just an off comment about the kingdom. And I'm like, ooh, the kingdom? I'm like, are we gonna bring this in? Because if we're bringing the kingdom in now, I'm back. Because it would be awesome to see Ezekiel. It would be great, but I don't think they're gonna go there. I think they're gonna try to stay away from that, and that's not gonna be a thing. But man, if that was a thing, I would be so way back in, because that part of The Walking Dead would be a really great episode.
Yeah, you know, to me, I'm kind of turned on by when you have some of those character development episodes. I enjoy those a little bit because, to me, you know, if you have every episode that's at level 10, it just all kind of turns into noise. So when they have those character development episodes and they're meaningful and they're about characters that you're really invested in, it makes a big difference. But, you know, I also totally get what you're saying, because episodes 1 and 2, you cared about those people so much. That being said, though, I do kind of like seeing the Javi and Clem dynamic in this one, because instead of Clem sort of being like with her older person kind of leading her through this terrible world and she's a little kid, it's almost like she's leading him around and she's really the alpha, you know, and it's kind of cool to see that dynamic there. So I do kind of like that dynamic between those two characters, Clem and Javi, but I hear what you're saying. You're not quite as invested in this crew as you were in episodes 1 and 2, or seasons 1 and 2, excuse me.
One of the things that you can also, if you are subscribed to Xbox Live or Xbox Gold, right now up until the 30th, you can get Season 2 of The Walking Dead as your Games with Gold. Just tossing that out.
Oh, snap. I'm probably, I'll should download that.
I cannot stress enough how amazing the original season of The Walking Dead for Telltale is. It's literally living off of that. Like, the studio itself is living off of that first season. Because
great.
Everything else is paled. The Borderlands season 1 is seems to be what everybody says is the creme de la creme. To me personally, that first season of The Walking Dead, and I've played Tales from the Borderlands, I played everything that Telltale's done, still holds up as, for me, the most emotionally attached I've been to any season of Telltale that they've done.
Nice.
Yeah, Chris, did you play the Minecraft?
And you know how you know? How many characters can you name from season one?
Yes,
and how many characters can you name from season two and season three? You could sit there and be like, Duck, and, you know, this one, that one. You know, that's how you know.
So we're going to keep on the Telltale theme, and Damien and I have started playing Guardians of the Galaxy. So thoughts about Guardians of the Galaxy. I played the episode last night, roughly about 2.5 hours, maybe a little less, somewhere around there.
Yeah, I'd say it's about that. That's even going through and you know, exploring the stuff. There's a couple like hiccups with it that I mean, now it's a little, in their defense, it's a little kind of hard with, yes, very robotic motions. Their games are typically you're playing along and you're hitting buttons, you know, to guide the character along a already predetermined path. I appreciate having control of a character, but when the character's animations are like, he's doing the robot. Now, if you had him to where he was doing this dance like he does in the opening of the movie, that's one thing. But yeah, when you're just very kind of, it's very blocky movements. It can take you a little bit because you're getting these cutscenes, these beautiful scenes that you're interacting with. But then it goes into this other, when it goes into block, it kind of pulls you out of your immersion.
This is referred to as the Telltale jank, because it's very janky. like the whole episode that I was playing, you could see frame dips all over the place. This is the new engine that they use for Batman, which this game played a lot like Batman, the animated, or the Batman, the Telltale version. So it had a lot of the newer movements where it's a swipe B up A, like, so they're trying to make that choreographed movement feel a lot smoother, but the problem is when you have that jank, it slows it all down, so then it feels very 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, like you can feel it skipping. It for me, this whole entire episode was okay. I mean, it didn't pop the radar for me, and it wasn't unbelievably great. But it wasn't unbelievably bad. It was kind of a first episode for Telltale, which is typical. For me, Telltale is a very great 5 to 6 anymore. Like, they don't pop the radar and jump up, this is an amazing game, but they never produce anything that's shit either. So it's like, you know, it's okay. Like, it was a good story. It's not part of the Marvel Universe, for sure. It's not the MCU. This is
way
off the Richter scale of anything that's going on in the movie. So if you're expecting anything with Guardians of the Galaxy that deals with the movie version, that's not going to happen. And in fact, they went so far as to say that they on purpose did not do that because they don't want to confuse anybody on what's going on. Although they acknowledge that the reason that people are going to play this is because of that, because of the MCU. So it's a really weird combination of how they're coming up with the game. I was at the panel at PAX East that had the head of Marvel. We talked about that a few weeks ago. It did have a really big fight scene. So like, and the scene lasted probably a good, I don't know, 7-8 minutes, and you got to play now to anybody who's going to play this game, you play as one character in this game for about 95% of this, except for that fight scene. So you play as Starkiller in this episode. Things that are a little different that I think are really cool compared to some of The Walking Dead, and Big D, you might appreciate this, is things that you say to one character will affect how they speak to the other characters, which is not like that in any other in The Walking Dead or anything else that Telltale does, which is kind of interesting. So normally if you say something to a character, they'll remember that, and that's how they speak to you. How you say that something to Raccoon is how he's going to say something to Gamora, or vice versa, depending on how it is that you speak to him. So I thought that's a new technique that wasn't a part of typical Telltale games. Pretty interesting. And the fact that they are eventually going to allow you to play as other characters, so you get to see their point of view, I think is really good. I wasn't invested in Starkiller though in this at all.
They missed. I feel that there's a couple things that, without going too in depth, that if you're going and you're being the completionist and you're going around and searching for things, there's moments where they missed an opportunity to pull you in the fields for Peter Quill. And that part, I was like, oh man, I was like, I saw something. I was like, oh, you're going to totally hear something really cool. Now where I did like is that make sure you check everything, like read everything. If you have access to a terminal, click on it, go through everything, because there is some really cool humor here. I'm just saying that I think me and Yondu have the same typing. Go to the, you know, he types like I mess up and type. Spell check is a thing in the future, or it might not be in where he's from, but it was funny.
And you don't have to go to a person and talk to them, because you can talk to them through a comm mic, which means that you have the option of talking to people even when you're not near them. You have a scroll wheel to talk to people, which I think is really cool, because you can ask them questions while you're not around them, which I thought was really awesome too.
Another thing is that this one, when you get into this, it says logging in. Like when you're, it says logging into network. Now I'm like, okay, how is this a multiplayer game? Well, Telltale's has kind of taken a step towards the Beam idea of playing these games, because Beam has been used to create the process that they're now putting out in their games, which is you can set this game up to share with friends to watch you, and they can vote on what your response is as you're playing the game and they're watching you play. So they can vote on, hey, I want you to say this, and then it clicks, and then they get to basically just watch the experience as you play it. So I thought that's kind of a cool movement, and I think it'll lend itself pretty nicely to the streaming of the title.
If you were going to say the top game of March, and I told you that in that top tier was Nier Automata, which was a huge success, there was Breath of the Wild. Would you have guessed that Ghost Recon Wildlands would have landed the top spot in the NPD for the month of March?
No.
Top spot?
No.
Yes.
I enjoy it, but if the fact that I can play that game and I can step away from it and go play something that's older, like Elder Scrolls Online, that really blows my mind, especially when the games like Breath of the Wild came out and are up against that. That's just crazy to me. Cajun?
Yeah, I'm not surprised for one reason, and that is Breath of the Wild's on one system, Nier's on one system, Ghost Recon is on multiple systems, so you have more potential buyers, so your percentage of market share might be smaller than those systems, with Breath of the Wild being over 100% on Switch, and Nier having a lot of people buying it as well too. You might only have a small percentage of people who could play that game buying it, but then that pool is much larger. So that's how you get that big.
In this NPD though, and I'm just going to do this as a side note, the we'll rattle off the top five. Ghost Wildlands was one, Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild was two, Mass Effect Andromeda was three, Horizon Zero Dawn 4, and MLB The Show, which always kills it, especially this time of year, was 5. But with Breath of the Wild, Horizon, and MLB, those do not include digital sales, whereas Mass Effect Andromeda and Tom Clancy's Wildlands does. So if I'm a person, so if you're adding in, and this is because PlayStation doesn't list their online sales, so you're losing out on MLB, you're losing out on Horizon, and I don't know why Nintendo is not listed. Yeah, and Nier. And Nier, Nier Automata actually had their digital sales released, which is weird.
Okay.
Certain games for PlayStation, they don't. I think it's because it fell so far down at number 9, where Nier Automata was, but for a game still sell a million copies that wasn't even, it's a sequel to a game that didn't sell well at all, it was kind of a shining star for PlayStation. But my point is if you add in the digital sales for those copies, specifically for Horizon and MLB The Show, they may have risen up above Mass Effect Andromeda. Remember, their pre-digital sale releases were from 3, 4, 5 months ago. So that's what they're boasting in order to keep that number up, number 3. And hell, they'll release the shit out of that, because you know how people felt about Mass Effect Andromeda. So they want everybody to know that they were number 3 for the month of March.
So next up, we're going out of the arcade, and we are heading into the hype train.
So in the hype train, we talk about things that are upcoming, things that haven't occurred yet, or in the future. And the first thing that we're going to talk about is the rumor of the Xbox Scorpio price that a Spanish retailer may have divulged at $399. Man, I'll tell you what, if $399 is the price point, and I'm hoping that it is. Now, we know that price holders are put into place on a lot of these websites, so $399 may not be the case, but it seems like a really weird price holder at $399. If they sell this at $399 domestically, it will blow the doors off of PlayStation.
Yeah, it's insane. That's cheaper than the Xbox One was at launch. I'm one of the early adopters that had the day one edition. And
me too.
You know, it's like seeing that, I'm excited. Like that makes it a lot easier for me to explain to the wife, hey, I need this for streaming and stuff like that. Big word is I'm saying I need. But I tell her, hey, I'm
need versus want.
I'll trade two Xbox Ones for it. I got some money set aside for it. You know, it'll take care of it. Well, the thing is now if that $399 is the price point, that actually very well two original Xbox Ones and then the money I got set aside, that should I'll be able to walk in, get it, and walk out the door with a game.
Your Xbox One though is now worth $100. So you may be better off keeping it as a Blu-ray player.
Well, true. I mean, like I said, it depends on what they offer. There, you know, because here's the thing: the Xbox isn't stupid. What they're going to do is they're going to offer insane amount of a trade-in value if you're a PlayStation player trading your PlayStation 4 in. They're going to go and whatever that is, they're going to up that value quite a bit to get PlayStation players to come over.
What do we think?
Yeah, but how do you trade in a PlayStation and Xbox knows it?
Because they offer the best deals through their kiosks and their Xbox stores or their Microsoft stores. You go to a Microsoft store or a kiosk and you do the trade-in, and they give you a huge upgrade. I did it on my PlayStation 3 to get a new Xbox for one of my kids 1 year for Christmas.
So what are the thoughts on the Xbox S, One S, or the original price point if this is going for $399.
I'm saying $200, maybe even $189 for the Xbox One S.
$189 says cheap. It feels cheap. I feel like I need to spend over $200 to make it a gaming system. But yeah. Because
I don't know. I think it has to drop that low. And if everything about this is the market share for users, it means gaming systems in people's hands, lowering the price point. Is one of the hugest ways to get there. And like you said last week, Chris, Xbox lags Sony significantly in exclusives. So if you can get the system to people's hands in other means, lowering the price point, this is the way to do it.
Yeah, and you also have to remember that a whole lot of people are going to look at it as, wait, I could play the same games. They're going to be in HD. I'll get the cheaper
especially
system.
Especially if you only have a 1080p PTV.
I'm not going to be getting VR goggles and whatever. You know, there's going to be your high-end people that have their hi-fi systems and, you know, the surround sound and this and that are going to be like, I got my 4K TV. I need that Project Scorpio. But there's a whole lot of people that are not there yet. And, you know, Xbox is doing something really interesting, which is trying to put a product out for everybody. To meet everybody's needs. I think it's really clever. I think it's going to work.
I really can play with my friends. So if I have an Xbox One S and you have a Scorpio and you have a kick-ass PC, we can all play Destiny. Or we can all play Rocket League. Or we can all play whatever. And I don't feel less than you by playing it because it doesn't matter what it looks like on my screen. I'm having a fun time playing with you. Like, when I play Destiny, I'm not worried about the graphics. I'm just worried about if I'm going to kill somebody, right? Like, that's the point. So as long as we can all play on the same platform and we're all having a good time together, doesn't matter to me. And so if you own a 1080p, you don't feel like you have to buy a 4K. I don't have to buy a 4K. I can still play with you, and we can still have the same fun. Just you played on one platform and I played on another. Or same, different, not platform, but device.
This actually lent itself really well to a conversation. I was having at work with a couple of ER docs, and they're talking about developing their man cave stuff. He's like, oh, yeah, I've been waiting to get a 4K Blu-ray player and this stuff. I'm like, why are you waiting? He goes, well, I'm kind of waiting for the Scorpio. I'm like, well, you can wait for the Scorpio. He goes, but I wanted to get it in a couple rooms. I'm like, if you get an Xbox One S, they keep putting good deals out there. That's a 4K Blu-ray player right there, and it's got HDR with it. He goes, really? There's a lot of people out there that still don't realize that if they're looking for a 4K Blu-ray player, one of your best Blu-ray players you're going to get. This is just a similar thing that the PlayStation used to be. The Sony PlayStation used to be like the best Blu-ray player you could get, you know, for your money.
Right.
Well, the Xbox One S is like one of the best, you know, 4K Blu-ray players you can get for your money, even if you're not going to play games. But I told him, I go, if you're looking to wait till June, till after E3, where the price point is actually listed, because that's when you're going to hear a price point drop for the Xbox One S. You'll get a much better deal on it.
Nice. Yeah, and I didn't think about that because, yeah, I remember that too, because the gaming systems are so subsidized by the game prices that they're expecting to sell for them that, yeah, you get that the physical hardware in it is so ridiculously cheaper, which we see in that price, but I forgot about that as a player. Somebody just looking for a player, go with that. Yeah,
and another thing is like even just looking at controllers. If you're looking at now, they have the Xbox has the Tech Series controllers that are coming out. They are slowly giving you variable options of similar, like lower tier price elite controller stuff. Like so, like with this first of the Tech Series, it gives you the mesh or like the kind of the rubber matte feeling of the controller and a grip. So it does it. You don't want your hands sweat. And then they're going to also, they're looking at what I'm, and I'm not, anyway, they're looking at, there are options that they're showing of possibly a tech tier controller coming out that will have the saucer. It'll be plastic, but it'd be the saucer already pre-installed on the controller versus the directional pad, just because people are saying that they're really liking that. And so you'll get, people will have options to get things that aren't necessarily an elite.
This is a big
one.
You
guys have some Rebels? Yeah.
Yeah. Star Wars Rebels is going to end with Season 4, which I think is kind of telling on where the new Star Wars is headed. I think it kind of speaks to the fact that Rebels has run its course on how much farther it can go before it starts becoming irrelevant to where the series is going. And so they need to finish up this story and kind of tell where everybody is, especially so Ahsoka is going to, you're going to find out what happens. Like I'm sure you're going to, and you need to know where Ezra is, because Ezra, if you look at the episode, is a bit older than Luke, but you know, and I would guesstimate by about maybe 10 years, maybe somewhere give or take. If you watched, and I don't want to give away too many spoilers in this last season, especially with the Obi-Wan Kenobi episode. So there's going to be some resolution. We know where this is landing. This is landing right before A New Hope. And so some of these characters may find their way into The Last Jedi or the next episode, and it's going to be Elder Statesman, because by that time they will be Elder Statesman. But if they're going to do that, they need to wrap it up very quickly. And I think that they feel like that if we're going to move on to the next cartoon series, now's the time to do that.
Now, another thing with that they're working on with Rebels is an Easter egg. And this actually came up. There's another thing that came up on Reddit. Because I was doing some research trying to figure out, because I came up, I was like, oh my God, this is ending with Season 4. I think that I got an idea here that I looked up, and it's actually a fan theory, as well as it's starting to look like it could be a possible idea of who Rey's parents are, which actually ties back to another fan theory, is that Ezra and Sabine, the Mandalore, could possibly be Rey's parents. If that was to play out, if that was true, that would mean that Rey is a Kenobi, because Sabine is alluded to be Kenobi's daughter from his relationship in Clone Wars with Satine.
Again, us kind of stretching like Gumby with really,
but it's within, it is within the canon. It is within canon, so it very well could be.
And tentacles.
With how much they've been teasing and giving information into the series from Rebels, wanting to create this universe and expand it out and bring other canon things in, like I'm saying Revan, you know, is coming back. This is all a really cool idea, and could be something that, if it does happen, it would be awesome to the fans. Derek?
How does Rey's age play into that? Because in the actual timeline, she seems to be, I think, a little younger than Kylo Ren in Force Awakens, but this would make her older, right?
I think Sabine and Ezra are right at the same age as Luke, actually. Going by the time period, I think they're like maybe 3-4 years older. Tops.
But when you watch last season, yep. When you watch last season, and you watch Ben look over and he's on Tatooine, Luke is only about, I would guesstimate, somewhere around 7 or 8 years old.
Okay.
So it would jump her at almost 18 years old, and then if you're talking about that, to Cajun's point, she would be almost 15 years older than whatever the timeline would wrap up. So it wouldn't it doesn't mesh.
I'm just over here poking holes.
Yeah.
It could.
So, keeping on the Star Wars trend, which, by the way, last weekend with that, we already ran our extra episode on the trailer, and so that's why we're talking about Rebels. And now the trailer for Battlefront 2, which just as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, yes, this is everything Battlefront 1 should have been. Thank you for having Destiny 1, Battlefront 1. And now give us Battlefront 2, which has everything that we're looking for. A really, really great storyline. Walt Williams is the one who's directing. He did Spec Ops: The Line as far as writing this episode. And it was really interesting because I follow Podcast Unlocked and a lot of IGN writers. And Mitch Dyer, who was formerly from IGN, is now one of the co-writers on this and is a huge investment in Star Wars because was a huge Star Wars fan going into this, so you know that there's a lot of passion involved as far as that's concerned. With Battlefront 2, you follow the character of Iden, who is not a rebel, which is kind of interesting. You know what I mean? I think they show the scene on Endor, and she's part
from
of the
shoulder up.
Yeah, from the shoulders up, and she's part of that Inferno squad, which is going to be a solo book, which, by the way, which looks really good. It's canon. And they go into Endor, and they're taking everybody out. And you see just, like, they're just knocking people left and right. And all of a sudden, they look up, and they see the Death Star, and it explodes. So imagine being on the other end of that and not being the Rebels. And what happens when all you know is that. So, I mean, they think the Rebels are the bad guys, you know? Mm-hmm. And so she comes from a planet that is now going to be canon. Which is Vardos, which is brand new to the Star Wars universe. So there might be things that are involved in that come into episode 9 or 10 or whatever. So these things moving forward, which I think are interesting.
What happened, this is also a direct answer to a fan favorite new inclusion in Rogue One, which is Disney was very quickly to like, oh, we gotta bring this in further into canon. We had the Death Troopers in Rogue One. And everybody lost their shit with the Death Troopers. Everybody loved them. I mean, how could you not? They were this elite. Like, you saw them. They could hit their targets. They could hit their targets. I mean, so everybody loved them. Like, I mean, the cosplayers, everybody loves the Death Troopers. They're like, now you fast forward, you got to explain what happened to, if they had these elite forces of Stormtroopers, what happened to them? They're able to tell that story by switching it over, and now they're going to start explaining it, which is canon within the book and within Battlefront 2, which could very easily roll into Captain Phasma's elite force of troopers. This is what I'm thinking that you're going to start to see.
So they have Mark Thompson, who leads Motive, which is basically the group that runs this studio for Battlefront 2. And I think the quote that he has in the article that I'm reading from Polygon is very interesting. "We never describe the Empire as the bad guys in Battlefront 2, Thompson said. "We never say Iden is a villain. We just present the other side of the conflict." Which is good.
Awesome.
Because which says to me that there's no opportunity for Iden to turn. I don't want her to feel like being part of the Empire makes her feel bad. She should feel like a rebel who feels like her cause is just as justified as somebody who's on the other side.
I agree.
Yeah, and what's interesting too is, I'm curious to see how they make this story work with like the Aftermath storyline, which is canon, and also the book Bloodline, because those are both a couple of great book series that take place between Return of the Jedi and Force Awakens, and so I'm curious to see if there's any tie in there. But speaking to the Aftermath series specifically, you know, that was a place where one of the characters that you're kind of following and starting to have some empathy for is Rey Sloane, who is an Imperial officer, and she feels betrayed, and you start to kind of feel like you're on her side a little bit, and she's caught up in like some internal struggles, you know, within the remnants of the Empire that are left after Endor. So, you know, this is a different take on it, because this isn't an apologetic person or a person who's angry about the direction the Empire is taking. This, you know, this character for Battlefield 2 is somebody who's just full on like, I'm the Empire and you rebels suck. And that's who you're playing. So I'm curious to see how they handle that. But yeah, I want to see how it ties into the canon books too.
It's interesting because they were able to do this because of Finn, because you saw how Finn was on part of the Empire and then he was able to see the light, which again, I hope they don't do this with this character. But the reason why they're able to tie this in, Big D, is because this goes over 30 years. And so this character starts out in Return of the Jedi, but is able to be now leaped forward into where we're at now in the canon. And so that's how you're able to get away with the fact that there is the end game is still you're writing the canon as opposed to you're being forced to fit into the canon. Which I think mm-hmm. that they have that opportunity right now.
So with this right here, this also blends in what I was saying with the Last Jedi trailer, is that it seems like the Star Wars story is moving from these two polar light and darks to more of this central gray, showing a good side to the dark side, showing a bad side to the light, and bringing them closer together in that middle area. And I'm wondering if Battlefront got a lot of direction from the studio saying, this is where we're going with the movie. We need you to bring it this way. You need to bring the dark side this way, but we bring the light this way and meet in the middle.
One other thing that came from the Star Wars celebration that they did, they showed footage from Darth Vader's scene when he first force chokes somebody, and it's before James Earl Jones' dubbed in voice was in it, but they mention, and this is all going into what's considered to be what's going to be the next saga. They talk about the Old Republic. They talk about the Old Republic back in the original film that got cut, and it was the scene that they showed.
Gray Jedis
and the Revan saga. That. Just going to be, if they go back and do that to explain everything, it'll be an amazing, amazing event.
If they just bring Revan in at all.
They've already, he's in. I know. Because the thing is Revan was experienced. It would be such an incredible thing because we experienced Revan. We played as Revan. So they put that into a film. Like most of us replayed the character on both sides and experienced the different endings. That would be such an epic event. You just have to find the right person to play him that would be able to play and show the emotions that that character goes through. But that saga of a film explaining the Old Republic would just be, it would be bananas.
So there was some question when the title of The Last Jedi came out. Did Jedi mean singular? Did it mean plural? Mm-hmm. Were there Jedis? What is Jedi meaning, just Jedi? I mean, it was kind of confusing. I think they tried to, and we talked about this in the cast about the trailer, express that it meant a singular Jedi, which we thought, but Johnson, the director of The Last Jedi, came out and said that it was meant to be a singular force. It is meant to be Luke. Luke is the Last Jedi. Like, that's what it's meant mm-hmm. to be. And so when he says that, I think it leads even more credence to our synopsis that he's going to lead into a version of the Jedi that is no longer called the Jedi. It's called something different. And so I think that he is the Last Jedi and there will be something else, which they, if they're going to go in on this whole, it's going to be something else. They're going to have to be balls out on this, because the word Jedi is very synonymous with Star Wars, and you are going to have to change an entire, not just nerd culture, but everyday person culture who knows what the word Jedi means.
Right. But you will have 8 movies and tons of other series with that ongoing and the history of it still there. And if they're going to be going to something else besides Jedi as the lightsaber wielding non-red lightsaber team, then that's a bold move, and I like it. And
it depends, because like their sabers have changed with the new canon. The crystals bleed, so it depends on whichever they go more towards. Their saber color can change. The crystal is an extension of the Force user themselves.
I think it's helpful that he just came out and said that the fact that this is singular, because then you're like, I don't think anybody's even talked about this, honestly, in the last like month. Now that the trailer came out and we saw the con from last weekend, it's really kind of fallen far off. Which, so for him to say this is like, it's just a throwaway line. Like, you know what? It's always been singular. It's not a big deal. Well, of course, now that you've watched the trailer for the movie, it's pretty obvious that he, at least from what mm-hmm. we saw, that he's the last Jedi. So anyway, just a small point that I thought I'd point out. Another thing, speaking of Star Wars, we know that Disney is hellbent on 2019 having their theme park done in Star Wars in the tune of, you know, Animal Kingdom and Magic Kingdom and whatnot. And so the experience staying in a hotel now allows you to sleep inside the starship and live the story. They have figured out a way, and this is an article that I read, to create lightsabers that are so realistic that you will not be able to tell the difference. Forget it. Yeah, just tell me where I'm throwing my money. Just tell me where I'm throwing it.
Now, that was using their holograph. You're in a specialized room. You're in a holograph room with that, if I read correctly.
Yes.
Which was crazy, because when I was down there at Disneyland, they were talking about this. When you went through the Star Wars experience, they were talking about how they wanted to bring that in. And it was alluded to at some of the, you'd see like these little signs and stuff, and they would talk about the theory. And we actually talked about it on our podcast, the theory of how you would create that. And sure enough, they're doing it. Like, and also, I'm wondering if this means I'm actually going to be able to go stay in that hotel. Can I wear my damn Sith costume and be in the park?
That's true.
I am angry. I walked down there.
Still bitter about this. Jesus.
I am very bitter about this. It was freaking hot as hell, and I was wearing a full Sith outfit, and I had to take it off. I was very angry.
It wasn't the outfit. I thought it was the saber. Was the saber the? I thought the saber was the reason.
No, everything, because they're worried I was going to scare kids or all that stupid stuff. And then I watch Han, they're like, your outfit is too authentic. It looks, and then I watch Han Solo and Princess Leia walk right by me, right on into the park. And I'm like, what's that? They're like, we don't have a Han Solo and a Princess Leia in the park, so they can come in. But we have Jedi and we have Sith walking around.
I know that they're going to have a ride that they've already announced. It's going to be basically running the Millennium Falcon, which I think is pretty cool too. Like, you get to run the gunner side, and then you get to run the starship side, where so you can actually fly the Falcon.
Oh my god! That's so
if
awesome.
You're the gunner,
real life Sea of Thieves.
If you're the gunner, like if you have two people on this ride, and one person's a gunner on the Falcon, the other person is actually flying the ship, that is effing awesome. Like I wouldn't be on
any other ride. I'll just be in that thing back in line constantly.
That's the only shitty part about this. With it opening constantly. In 2019, it's like people are just gonna be flooding. I mean flooding this place for at least a year, if not two, for all of this. It's gonna be like, remember the toy if you've been to Disney in Florida, the Toy Story ride, like that cup ride where you get to play the video game. That ride fills up within like minutes. Like you can't.
It still
day,
does. It still does crappy. At Disneyland. It's
yeah,
crazy.
It's like damn. So I know that the way this is going to happen.
I just want a counter on the wall for that ride that counts how many times somebody during that particular day yelled out, "Don't get cocky,
don't get
kid."
Cocky.
Oh my god, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, what? Dude, that would be awesome. Because if you could be in that seat and spin while you do it, so you can spin and see the person flying and then spin back again and like
turn around.
Listen, they've already said that awesome. Both the hotel and the park will have a cantina for 21 and over. I am going to be in those cantinas.
I've seriously already been cock-blocked by my wife on this whole entire trip. I'm like, oh, we're just going to stay at the Star. She's like, absolutely not. I'm like, well, then you can stay in wherever it is. You can stay in Port Orleans and wherever the hell else you're going to stay, or the boardwalk, and I will stay by myself in this room. And I will
listen. We will have the podcast. How about this? How about the podcast goes with experiences of Star Wars? We could stream. We could do Twitch in real life. We'll go do that.
That would be awesome. That would actually be really awesome. All right,
that's going to be the plan.
Now, okay, now I'm gonna throw some shade. Yeah, you got to show up though, because I went to Vegas by myself.
I will show up with people from Uprising. I know.
But with the two organizers that were in this podcast, Yoda didn't show.
There it is.
Work happened.
Listen, if I'm going to a cantina in Disney, I need to have at least one karaoke appearance from DJ Cajun.
Oh God, yeah, that dude would come up no problem, man. If we do a podcast and we all show up, that is it. Yeah, I don't care how bad it's gonna be; it's gonna happen.
He'll be drinking something green.
I would like you to sing Waterfall by TLC.
Waterfall? Oh Jesus!
Oh yeah, I take requests.
See, I'll do the luau part in the background on that. All right, so we're gonna
move on.
You're gonna
be a slave girl. Okay,
we need to move on. Cajun has a little bit more experience in this because I'm trying to pull back memories from like when I was a kid. But Wheel of Time has been set as a TV showrunner, and it is coming out. Sony is producing this thing. 12 books spanning a total of 14 books spanning a total of, I believe, like 13 or 14 years, right? Up to 2007 from 1993 or 94, somewhere around there. So Cajun, why don't you give us a breakdown on just a general overview of what Wheel of Time is?
Okay, so I'm in the middle, not in the middle of the series. I'm a book and a half left to finish it. Absolutely love the series. It's very Lord of the Rings-esque, but much longer. Like I said, 14 long books. A lot of people compare it to Game of Thrones, but I disagree wholeheartedly because it's not as adult in content and you don't lose as many important characters, which I feel won't translate well to the screen, but it's very magic centric. Basically premise story: three guys from a small town get brought into this big magical world, and story continues with with journeys happening simultaneously around the world. So it's very similar to Lord of the Rings in that front, with a lot of magic, a lot of creatures, a lot of stuff happening in there. And this has been moved from studio to studio. Sony Pictures Television is going to be financing and producing this. The showrunner is Rafe Judkins from, he did Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Chuck, and Hemlock Grove, which all were very, in terms of critical reception, meh. Which is my only reservation.
I really
I've been wanting this series for a long time.
My reservation is Sony because of Spider-Man. Like, that's my reservation. When they take a major product, they tend to muck it up a little bit. And this, the thing about this is it has a shit ton of fans. Okay, so we're talking a span, and I just read it's 1990, so we're talking a span of almost 17 years. There are people that love this. So you screw this up, if you F this Harry Potter style and leave things out or don't tell the story according to the book, people will let you know. The one thing that's nice about this is when you do things as a TV series, it gives you a lot more leeway as far as extending out and digging into characters as opposed to just having to cut things short on a 2.5-hour movie. So if they do this, they would have to know that this is going to be
14 seasons.
Yeah, this is a long haul. Will it stand that? Will people care about it that much? But if they come out and say, listen, we're going to put our foot in the sand, even if they don't believe it, and they're going to have 14 seasons, you know, that would be probably the way to go.
Right. And the major thing would be is because how the story starts with these guys being kids and the story itself being 14 books is not 14 years of their life. How well will they age in the show? So I could see this more as a 7-season show just because if they're doing that, but they would have to do one good season. And the first book is fantastic with a great ending. So I could see the first season being a hit. And the second one would need to just come right off on the back of that and be also as good as a show. Because I remember correctly, I don't think the second book, which is I think The Great Hunt, has as strong of an ending as the first one. But I will have to go back and remember how it ended, and you'll have to keep that momentum going. If they did it in seven, they would have to maybe combine those. And how do you do the – because those books are known for big, epic endings with a lot of filler.
So the way you can do this is you can have mid-season cuts and have your big finales in mid-season cuts. And they could do do it Game of Thrones style, where they're combining seasons, which Game of Thrones does really, really well. That they cut those books and did like three, ran into four. So if you do a mid-season break and you just hit it hard, and then you do it like Walking Dead style, and then cut, and then move on. They haven't named a distributor as far as a major market television. Have they named who's actually going to be like what channel is going to have this yet? So
no channel, no cast. The producing team.
Perfect if they did Netflix, because they could hit it hard on like, yeah, I know, I could see you begging. Either that or like a FX. Sci-fi. Pick somebody who doesn't care, that has a little bit more freedom in.
Don't pick sci-fi mainly because sci-fi is four season thing, and it killed. Yeah, so stay away from sci-fi.
Even FX.
Amazon's the one I'm targeting because they need the big show. They need the big show. They don't have as big of the draws that Netflix has all their shows. They need something that's like
Amazon. I think Amazon would be a good place too.
This fits. Yeah.
All right. So we're going to move on, and we're going to get into Guardians of the Galaxy. We talked about it earlier as far as the Telltale game, but we got a little bit of information about Volume 2. And there was a thing that was like, oh, well, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 has four postseason credits. Director comes out and goes, no, squash that. There are five. And one of them actually pertains to the lead into Avengers, and the rest are just kind of off the cuff stuff that Avengers did. Remember at the end of Avengers where they're all sitting around the table and they had the conversation? I have a feeling a couple of those are going to be jokey like that, and then you're going to see the lead in then to Infinity Wars. Like you're going to see that one big trailer. Mm-hmm. So if you're watching Guardians of the Galaxy, this is a forewarning: stay forever, because you're going to see. Five cuts at the end of this thing, and I would say that probably at least three of those are going to be like two people, and then the cut. You know what I mean? So they're gonna hit everybody in the Guardians of the Galaxy.
So yeah. One thing I'm curious about is that if we are going to be introduced with Guardians of the Galaxy, if in this film, if the Nova Corps is going to basically be eradicated. Or
cool.
if that happens, you know who that leaves for us to get? We get Nova. I'm just curious, because that is one character from the Guardians of the Galaxy storyline. There's actually two Novas, but it'd be interesting if that's how they bring it up. Derek?
Yeah, so this saying, him saying one leads to Avengers Infinity Wars, remember, leading in for this is like five Infinity Stones. Mm-hmm. One of them is at the Nova Corps, so the final scene could be how
the Nova Corps
stone gets pulled out of the Nova Corps, or what happens there, and that's the impetus, because maybe the Russo brothers don't want to tell the story of how every core gets into the Infinity Gauntlet. Maybe they want to tell a few. So this is going to tell one at the end. Thor Ragnarok's going to tell maybe the Soul Stone, and then they only have to tell three in their movie.
This movie, he has to say that, and I think that it's a good idea, because people are so used to a couple of cuts, and then they know it's the end credits, so people leave. So if they do four of these, you don't want somebody leaving before they see that last one, because they'll feel like they lost out on the fact that they had no idea that it was going
to
be at the end.
You have to say it.
Yeah, so you almost have to say it. They forced his hand. It was kind of a jokey joke, but like it's coming up here in like less than 2 weeks. I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy is coming out, which is really exciting. Volume 2 looks badass. Good music. So we're going to move back to Disney. We were just talking about being there. And Apple, which I'm thank God Fouts is not here.
I was just going to say, Fouts will own. Fouts would start to own Apple products. This would make Fouts own Apple products.
No, he wouldn't.
They're looking to buy Disney for $200 billion. Billion with a B. Dollars. If Disney is bought out by Apple, for one, this makes a shit ton of sense for iTunes. Not only do you own all of their music, but then you own all of their movies. So you cut out the middleman as far as distribution, and you make all of the profit off of every Disney movie ever. Second of all, you're the sole proprietor of all Disney movies. Nobody else can have them. Android can't have them. Amazon can't have them. F that. We own them. You want them, you got to buy it on iTunes. And third, the free commercialization in every one of their parks of Apple anything is just crazy. Like, you can sell, you can make the fact that if you walk into a park and you have an iPhone and you have the app, you get blah, 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 or you get a free this, or you get a fast pass or extra fast pass to that. There's a lot of things you can do.
And if you have Apple's diversifying. Apple Music, you get...
No, Apple's diversifying. They're not stupid. Mm-hmm. The computer market is not something they really own the market in anymore. And if they're ever fearful of the fact that the iPhone is never... I mean, think about it now. The Samsung 8, the S8, is people are already talking about this is the Apple killer, or this is surpassing. We're leapfrogging Apple now as far as the phone market is concerned. If they're doing that, they have to diversify their market, and now they're owning something, a property they know is going to make them money in the back end forever.
However, that Samsung has to not explode.
Yes. It does.
There is that, because there are still people who do not know that S6, X, all these things are different ones. Mm-hmm. They see Samsung, burn, explode. I'm not getting a Samsung phone, so that could definitely hurt them there.
We tried really hard. I know I tried really hard in order to get a Nintendo Mini that had the old 8-book look. And every time you would go to try to find one at a Walmart or go try to find one at a Target, the answer was go look at the black market and go find a retailer who was a reseller of these things who was able to find it at a steal of a price. You know, obviously the $60 price tag versus the online price of what, about $299, $199, depending on wherever you found it. So what we found out this week is that 1.9 million of those were purchased. Okay, so almost 2 million were purchased. Meaning that's all they basically distributed, because everyone that was distributed is purchased. Like, it's kind of crazy at this point. They undersold this thing by a mile. So now they're thinking about coming out with the SNES Mini. Are they coming out with the SNES Mini because they're going to have some of the old 8-bit stuff on it with new games that are SNES? Or do you really feel like Nintendo is just, like, giving the middle finger to people and like, we're just going to come out with the SNES? And the reason why I think, side note, is... Switch is going to have the virtual store, so like, why are we giving away games for basically nothing?
Nintendo is great. We talked about this ad nauseum a while back at driving demand, and by pulling the Nintendo Mini off the market shelves for an extended period of time, they're basically McRibbing it. It's like, hey, I know you like it. You can take it back, and we'll give it back to you whenever we're ready to sell it again. They're controlling demand here and doing something like an SNES Mini. And then next Christmas doing an N64 Mini. And then they can just cycle this every 3 years. Go back to the Nintendo Mini and keep doing it, because every Christmas season is the new must-have $60 Nintendo system that has X amount of games that you just throw in front and wax nostalgic with your kids, being the 30, 40-year-old parents that we are, remembering these gaming systems from back in the day. And I think this is them driving demand. And I heard a lot of people talking about the Nintendo Mini discontinuing in the media as Nintendo's failure. 1.9 million system is not a failure. The demand was so high. This is marketing by them, and marketing by them only. This is not a failure move by them. Anybody else?
Absolutely. And I love your description of this as McRibbing it, because that's such a perfect description.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually a smart play. And even if they didn't ever come out with another round of these things being produced, like you said, if it's now driving sales and driving interest for buying the digital versions of those, you know, those old school games on the new Switch, all of a sudden, you know, there's another revenue stream, and they're able to make a lot more off of each game by driving hype to that.
Exactly. Yep.
All right. So with that, Captain Marvel has a director. Finally, Carol Danvers has been revealed as the director for Captain Marvel. I don't think it says anything more than, one, a female director for a female lead, which I think is a really big deal. I think it adds credibility to Marvel's listing of directors. I know that they really wanted a firm female director, and they were looking for one. They found one. And this is one step closer to just getting this really badass movie out. Like, I just kind of want Brie Larson to be Captain Marvel. Let's just get this show on the road. I'm kind of over hearing about it now, and I want to see somebody take on Wonder Woman, because DC just keeps touting Wonder Woman. Just show what you got, because there's no female leads in the Marvel universe. Let's give us one.
I really would have liked, like, this is awesome that they're getting this director. However, if there's a site like another one that comes out, I would love to see a director like Kurt Locker's Catherine Bigelow take on. If they could get her into the Marvel Cinematic Universe to direct a couple of these films, I think that would be huge. That's just me. I like her movies, so.
Yeah, speaking of directors and universes, and to do a quick aside here, you haven't heard us give a lot of shade over on DC, because they have been signing up directors left and right to helm their projects, and big ones too, and we were talking about female ones. I know we mentioned previously that it was the rumor of Joss Whedon doing Batgirl, but now it's confirmed Joss Whedon is doing Batgirl, so he's bringing another female heroine to the universe, and he's going to be helming a project. So DC is riding their ship by bringing in directors, and eventually they're going to be, at least my theory is, getting rid of Zack Snyder helming their big projects by bringing in all these directors, finding out which one's going to be hitting, and then offering them, like, hey, look, they did this great thing for us. Bye-bye, Zack. Nice knowing you and your scenes.
Yeah, you're going to wind up seeing Whedon take over the DC universe. That's just if he's able to pull what he did with Avengers for DC.
Right.
Yeah.
And DC doesn't pull to him what Marvel did for Age of Ultron, removing creative control. Give that man creative control.
Exactly. Exactly.
And let's go. Because they did it with Matt Reeves in the Batman movie. So we know they're willing to do it. And if he does go with Batgirl, that's the game on for giving him Justice League 2, which that's.
Yeah, and at that point, that's when Marvel needs to say, okay, you know, we need to start watching it, because you get you have Joss Whedon over there. That's just saying, Marvel, watch out, because, you know, your guy who helped you create this whole cinematic universe is on the other side, you know.
Yeah, but they're not competing side by side though for this.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, they're not going to be competing weekends. They're just going to be making their bank too. They're going to be making their profit margin too.
And the fans win. Watching Marvel's the fans win all in all. Yeah. That's what's at least hopefully the fans win.
Yeah,
yeah. And I'm really interested to see what version of Batgirl we see on the screen too. Like, is it going to be pure Barbara Gordon? Is it going to be kind of like one of these movie versions where it's sort of her, but then a little bit of characteristics from a couple of the other Batgirls that have been around, you know? There's a lot of ways they could go with it.
If they go Barbara Gordon, Commissioner Barbara Gordon, where she's a strong female lead as the Commissioner, and then as a strong female lead as Batgirl at the same time, I think that would be a really great way to take her character and move it in a different direction that has been typical for the DC universe.
Now, what if Joss Whedon went and did a race reversal on? Do you think that, you know? Because, I mean, you never know. DC could do that.
Could care less.
Yeah.
Yeah. He would. I don't think he would cast this by race at all. Just letting him pass. And he has, because of his Buffy days and other shows, he can do strong female leads, and he will. I think he will do great.
Oh yeah,
making Buffy, this a Charm. Strong female Batgirl instead of under Batman Batgirl.
So into the Marvel Universe, we got something that we talked about a month ago, is Marvel's Cloak and Dagger. We got a preview trailer. And what I took from that preview trailer, speaking of, just let's talk about Cloak and Dagger just in general to begin with. The story is about two teenagers from very different backgrounds, and they find themselves burdened and awakened to a newly acquired superpower while falling in love. It was a very teenage drama-ish preview that had a Marvel feel to it. They walked a really fine line for me, but they walked it really, really well. And so I'm hoping they can continue that, because it is a fine line. If it becomes too Buffy the Vampire Slayer slash, like, I'm like any type of vampire teenage flick. Do you know what I mean?
You don't want 90210 in the Marvel universe.
Twilight-ish. It's going to be very cheesy, and it's not going to carry the Marvel theme. However, if they go too dark, it's not going to be enough to carry young teenagers. So they have to. It's a balancing act. The preview looked really, really good. It has me interested in what's going on. Their initial meeting seemed kind of cheesy with the whole bumping of shoulder thing. I was like, ooh, that's awkward. But okay, I'll bypass that for some of the dialogue. So I have high hopes for this as long as it continues down the path that it looks like it's going.
Yeah, this seems like from a couple of scenes in the trailer, it looks like three different instances that run into each other. So it looks like this is the, at different ages, this is the, we're destined to be together. Mm-hmm. And they find out they have powers together, and they go on the run together. Is the story? There's things that come out in 2018, and that's my concern. You hit it right on the head. I don't want this to be one of these crappy teen dramas, because this is on Freeform Network, which, if you're unfamiliar, is the new branding of ABC Family. Mm-hmm. ABC Family is known for crappy teen dramas.
Yep.
They need to break free of that and do something with teen cast, but make it so an adult can watch it and enjoy it too. So from the trailer, I have hope. Let's see, because this is not till 2018. We got a ways to go before we can see it. All of this looked like it was episode one stuff. So let's see what we can do further along.
This gave me all the feels of The Flash. Like, this gave me kind of, you know, how they do their drama. And so obviously it can't go Netflix. It can't be that dark. But if it can go and push the line a little bit, something that I'm super excited for and hopeful for. Talking about things I'm hopeful for and excited for next week, cannot wait. Super Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. I have it coming for the Switch on Tuesday. I'm going to be playing the bajunk out of it as soon as I get it. So you know me and just Mario in general on my phone, let alone whether I can hold my Switch and play Mario Kart. So this is totally a game that you can zone out and just play while I'm watching television with my wife. And I'm really, really excited about it. I know that they have it for the Wii U. Do you have that, Cajun?
No, I don't have it for the Wii U. Do not. I mean, I haven't really gotten into the games on that one, but since Breath of the Wild, or before Breath of the Wild, but just because I was so tuned out of everything that was coming out of that system, because I was burned so many bad games. So, yeah, been out of it.
Mario Kart, though, man, the battle mode. Ugh.
We do have one more topic we skipped over in the notes. Esports will be a sport at the 2022 Asian Games.
I am going to sound really old if I say that this is not a sport. Like, to me, it just doesn't.
It's hand-eye coordination. That's like, I mean, It is a sport, because you really, I mean, these guys, how quickly their hands move, either it's on either via keyboard or anything else. Have you ever, I mean, when there's a documentary on Amazon that goes over and follows the eSport League, mainly about StarCraft, follows.
Yeah, I've seen that one.
And it's really good. But if you watch these pro players, how quickly their eye movement is, and then just their, it's insane. It's literally insane. I do understand that it's not, you're not out moving around. People would even say that paintball wasn't a sport when it was in its fastest, highest point. But, you know, I can get where you're coming from, but I do feel that, especially with how big it is over there on TV and everything, I could see that. I mean, if it came to the Olympics, that might be one thing I'd be like, eh, but... Derek?
Yeah. This is just the next evolution, I think, for esports. We're going to continually see it grow, and there is going to be eventual talk in our lifetimes about esports being in the Olympics, because this is something people have to train at. And you compete against other people in an idealized arena that does not have judges judging the winner. It's you all play by the same rules. And like, I remember when I was a Halo 3 and Halo 4 and Reach casual player, watching MLG tournaments for the main reason of watching people do things that I never thought possible in games that I would play. Same reason why I would watch basketball or football, sports I would play socially, but I would never put in the amount of effort. I'd never had the physical abilities or the skill to compete at that level. And watching people do things I never thought I could do in those sports ever. Same thing with MLG or esports. These are people doing things that I never thought possible, especially if it's a game I play. Like when I watch games like StarCraft or stuff I've never played, I'm like, what's going on here? But if it's something that I've played that's in a competitive arena, it's amazing to watch top-tier people going into other top-tier people pulling off amazing feats. And that's good in anything that you do socially when you understand the rules that you're watching. So for me, I like it. It's next phase, and I hope it continues to grow.
Yeah, and personally, as somebody who loves watching, like, the Halo Championships and a lot of esports stuff, I love watching those. I think it's awesome. Mm-hmm. I think it's stupid to put it next to physical sports. I don't know. I love trying to add new sports into big major tournaments like Olympics. I love the fact that they've added in kayaking over the past few years. I think that's amazing. You know, I don't know. I think it's something very different, and I just don't put them in the same category. I love it. I think esports are awesome. I just think it's trying to put a square peg in a round hole.
X Games got a lot of heat for putting esports in the X Games, but they got good viewership and good ratings for it. So yeah.
Maybe I'm just a curmudgeon.
Yeah. as we discussed earlier, our hair loss and children make us old men.
So are we ready to head back to the future?
Yes, this week in game.
Hey Doc, we better back up. We don't have enough road to get up to 88.
Roads? Well, we're going, we don't need roads.
April 19th, 1965, Electronics Magazine publishes an article by Gordon Moore, head of research and development for Fairchild Semiconductor and future co-founder of Intel. On the future of semiconductor components, in this article, Moore predicts that transistors density on integrated circuits will double every 18 months for at least the next 10 years. This theory will eventually come to be known as Moore's Law, and it still holds true to this day. It is predicted that Moore's Law will continue to be valid through 2020 or later.
Yep, we're incredible. Like, I just put a 64 gigabyte mini SD card in my wife's phone that's the size of my pinky nail, and you can get a 200 for that size. What we're seeing now with data storage size and processing size that we haven't even seen yet, it's continually gonna grow. And eventually there's going to be peak processing and peak size. I just, no one can predict what that's going to be in the future.
Yeah, it'll be crazy.
Yep. April 15th, 1977, the first annual West Coast Computer Fair is held over 3 days in San Francisco, attended by 12,750 people. The fair featured the debut of the Apple II computer, which featured 16 kilobytes of memory, basic and a built-in keyboard, 8 expansion slots, built-in high-resolution color graphics, and many credit this event. And the launch of the Apple II as giving birth to the personal computer industry, would also gave a launch to on April 15, 1977, this day, if that was the case, was a $2 billion valuation of Apple trying to buy Disney.
Yes. $200 billion.
$200 billion, yeah.
Holy hell.
Listen, this episode has a lot of Apple in it. There's probably a good reason why Fouts isn't here.
Oh yeah, he would have deleted that stuff and wouldn't even notice it. Like, yeah. That's an Apple comment.
This is right. True. So to wrap up and summarize, we're going to be working our way actually to live shows here pretty soon. So
yes, sir.
You'll be able to watch us while we do the episode. We're looking for feedback. We're looking for people to interact while we do the episodes. I think that would be really cool.
I have to put on clothes.
You have to put
on
the
show.
Come on, you gotta,
no more
Mavs t-shirts.
No more Mavs t-shirts.
I have a constant string of Mavs t-shirts from.
So to wrap up, we'll figure out where we can find everybody. Big D, where can people find you at?
So I'm on Twitter at BigD112358, or you can find me playing video games with Uprising Family Gaming, which is our video game clan. So you can just head over to UprisingFamilyGaming.com and check us out.
All right. And Derek, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Caucasian Saint, CaucasianSaint, on Twitter. And you can find me right here hosting this podcast. And also just wanted to do a quick shout out because we were all talking over it earlier. I was giving Damien and Not Here Fouts crap for the Vegas trip, saying that I was the only one there. But I, in the background, I was also saying there was Uprising Family Gaming people there. I was mainly doing that comment to give them crap, not the people there crap. They wouldn't believe it all anyway that were there having a good time. So,
Damien, what about you?
All right, you can find me on Twitter at Mr. Damien Nash, all one word. Man of the Geekologist Radio Twitter page. And yes, we are on Reddit. I am learning the rules and laws of Reddit, which is very, very interesting. And by interesting, I mean you people can give you a lot of crap on there. But
on the internet?
Yeah, I know, right?
How dare they?
We will be having a subreddit soon. The subreddit will actually be for queuedupmediagroup.com, and you'll be able to go on there and interact with members from the all our podcasts that we put out there. Young Khan, actually, shout out to Young Khan. He actually is going to be putting out a podcast here pretty soon. He's been working on getting all the stuff for that set up. And also, there's going to be another – there's the other – poop from our guys over with Nerdentials and whatnot. They'll be on there as well as their Too Long Didn't Watch podcast, which is a comedy that they do. And but yeah, we're gonna be all over the place. And but with the live series, we're gonna be trying to bring on some other people from different communities on with us.
Yeah, shout out to
and maybe even some of the Ninja Pancakes people too.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my God, we got to get on. We got to get Remy on. Remy, shout out to you, man. We're really looking forward. Remy is going to be putting out a podcast, a lore cast actually, and we're all fans of lore here on Diablo. There's going to be a Diablo lore cast that he is working on that is going to be insane. The man is a genius when it comes to
I don't think we'll have time to guest on our show. Is that what, like his fifth or sixth or seventh podcast he's hosting?
Something like that. But you know, hey, you know, he eventually appears on all the podcasts on the Ninja Pancake Network. And also, guys, really go out and listen. Give Geek Squatch a listen. Those guys, they pick up stuff that's just from the past, and it is a blast. Especially when we talk about us being dad gamers and all that stuff, and it's like the older crews.
My Definitely. Eating beverage is a good podcast to listen to as well.
Yes.
And so yeah.
And yeah. So Geek much Squatch, good, so though, much is like good. Us with memory. Like remember, we're like, oh, who was that and what was that? Those guys remember everything.
Yeah.
Like, oh, y'all remember that stuff because when we think of something off the cuff, we remember none of it. We're like, what was that dude's name? I saw him yesterday. We can't.
Also, much and love it, from the Geekologist Squad to Young Khan for last week's episode. He helped us with the Star Wars episode. And, man, he just had some mic issues, which cut him out. But the dude had some ridiculous takes on the Star Wars teaser trailer. If you have any questions or thoughts about his takes, why don't you give him a shout-out on Twitter? I'm for sure he'll be answering questions.
Yep. And also, you can find Damien Nash at Middledick.
Middledick?
Oh,
yeah.
Jesus, no.
We need to own that website. Somebody needs to
no, we do not get website, that website Wizard that on that. That is not a website that needs to be owned by anybody.
Hashtag Big D.
He's middle dick. Okay, now we know it.
It sounds like middle finger, except for it's called middle dick. Like that's the one I have. Every time I hear that, dude. That's what
I... So Big D.
It's gonna be a long 2017.
Big D, can I be your biggest fan?
Right. And my name is Christopher. You can find me at Two Wolves, TWOWLVZZ. I'm with these goofballs on a weekly basis as well as some other places. Geekologist Radio, we're at ninjapancake.com. And for that and for everything else, you can find us at Q.media. If you want to go to that website as well, you can find some information about us. And for this episode, we are...